Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter. That's the best way to do it. At Illegal Curve is the Twitter feed. If you want to check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And of course, our website, it is loaded up with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news. That is IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by the usual colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. And we're pleased to welcome into the studio for the entirety of the show today, Mike Colligan. Mike has, of course, been a frequent guest on this show. You've heard him going back probably at least, give or take 5 years now, Mike, that you've been joining us to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins, to talk about the NHL in general. You cover the NHL for Forbes Sports Money. It's great to have you here in Winnipeg in studio with us for the next 3 hours and really all weekend, as we have two Jets games this weekend as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to be here. And I think a lot of good hockey coming up, even though not playoff potential hockey. We're going to see two good teams here in Montreal and in Edmonton and McDavid coming in. So certainly looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think you speak for you're 100% right when you say that. I think there's a buzz in the city for Connor McDavid's arrival tomorrow night, because that's, you know, really one of the games that people had circled on their calendar from the start of the season. A little disappointed, of course, that it's not in the heat of a playoff race for the Winnipeg Jets. But people want to see Connor McDavid because he is just that exciting. Ezzy, good morning to you, sir.
Yeah, good morning, Drew. Mike, we just really want to know how Richie has been treating you. Like, has Richie been putting, like, a mint on your pillow? Like, you know, has he been a good host so far?
Well, first, I'd like to thank Rich for the hospitality. And I appreciate you guys bringing me in here. And
we're congratulations to the Blackhawks for winning the Stanley Cup. Good morning to you there, Richard. How are you, young man?
Doing well.
That's
doing
good.
Well,
let's get right into it. We'll start, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets. They played two games this week on, I guess they played last Saturday afternoon, but we're going to put that one to a side as it's been a full 7 days since that. We'll talk about the Tuesday and Thursday games, two defeats. But I think from a Winnipeg Jets fan perspective, who acknowledge that it's a lost season at this point in time, probably the best possible results, not for the players. Because the players, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Izzy, the players want to win each and every game. And that's why the talk about tanking is absurd, and I agree with you on that front. But from the fans' perspective, who would say, you know, we're hoping for a better spot in the draft lottery, a better chance at getting the first overall pick, the team has played hard for those two games, and they've come up just short once in regulation on Tuesday against the Panthers and then Thursday against the Islanders, losing in overtime. So from a Jets fans' perspective, how have you seen the last two games that have been played on home ice?
Drew, I mean, I think in reality the Jets probably could have, should have won at least one of those games, if not both. The argument could be made for both. Mm-hmm. They played pretty well. They just couldn't close on Thursday night. You got to be able to close that game if you care to, you know, in terms of if the fans care enough to be disappointed that they lost. As you mentioned, probably many are happy that they only got 1 point. But that was kind of a tale of the Jets season, wasn't it? I mean, yeah. You get the lead, you have the chance, and you can't close. Michael Hutchinson's, you know, that was probably a disappointing performance for him on Thursday. I thought he'd certainly been better this year. And overall, you know, again, it's the Jets carrying the play for periods of time. And we know that the Jets, and we said it, you know, the Jets aren't as bad as their record is. Like, some of these teams that they're down there with are really bad. The Jets are not that bad. But they have put themselves in this position and basically rendered the rest of the season meaningless, except for as it relates to the young players and then the development. And you're going to see another young player called up today.
Yeah, you're right, Richie. And these two losses this week at home, I agree, are kind of, the way the whole season has gone.
Yeah.
They've been disappointing, and I agree. I mean, this season has been a huge disappointment. Everyone in the Jets organization in that dressing room, any fan of the Jets would tell you that it's been a disappointing season. The Jets aren't going to make the playoffs. Even if they win 90% of their games, they're still not going to get into the playoffs. that game on Thursday night against the Islanders, I thought the Jets played very well and controlled the play for a majority of that game. And I thought Mark Scheifele, that was one of his better games of the year. And it's unfortunate, as Richie mentioned, you know, Mark Scheifele scores with a couple minutes left, or just over 2 minutes left, and the Jets aren't able to hold on to the victory. And, you know, Michael Hutchinson didn't have a very good game. He's had a rough year. It's been unfortunate for Michael Hutchinson. We're not really sure if he's going to factor in to the plans next year with the emergence of Connor Hellebuyck. But as Richie mentioned, really, the next 19 games here are really about next year. And you're going to see guys like Josh Morrissey and J.C. LePon and others come up, and they're going to be guys that have a shot at making the team next year. At the very least, guys, they have the chance to make a good impression. I would say a guy like J.C. LePon's probably, you know, a bit of a dark horse to make the team next year. Josh Morrissey, where does he fit in? Doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be a member of the starting six defenseman next year, but at the very least, he gets some NHL time. You know, they have to be careful as well if they're going to burn the entry level of his contract.
No, he's already burned it.
He's playing in the AHL.
Yeah. Sorry, so I apologize on that one. But he has a good chance to show what he can do. And, mm-hmm. you know, we know that, you know, right now the Jets' defense is pretty set for next year. Obviously, Jacob Trouba.
I sure hope it's not. If I'm a Jets fan, I sure hope it's not.
Well, just in the sense that there's a lot of five defensemen that are already signed for next year, right? Or six, five or six. So, you know, that's really, to me, what you're looking at here. As a Jets fan, going into the games this weekend against also two non-playoff teams.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, and again, the Montreal Canadiens are certainly one of those teams that aren't as bad as their record indicates.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's what you got to look for. I mean, right now,
Canadiens are 9 points ahead of the Winnipeg Jets, and which really does go to show you, I think, just how disappointing this year has been from the Jets' perspective.
From both.
Remember the Habs start, Drew. All right, the Habs started 11-0. They had the best start in the history of their franchise, the illustrious franchise of the Montreal Canadiens.
So think about that. Like, you want to talk about beginning of the season, okay. You want to talk about November,
sure.
Different story.
You know, absolutely. But, I mean, you know, the Habs season, it fell off a cliff when Carey Price was injured, and it was something that at first they thought they could weather it because Mike Condon came out and, you know, played very well when the injury first happened to Price. But since then, it's just been, you know, an absolute gong show of a disaster in Montreal. We're going to be joined by Amanda Stein from our sister station TSN 690 coming up in about 25 minutes time, give or take, to talk about the Habs, preview that game. You know, Mike, from your perspective, I don't expect that you're going to watch the Jets as closely as we do, obviously, but you know, you reside in Philadelphia now, you cover the Penguins, you cover the NHL for Forbes Sports Money. You know, from an outsider's point of view, what do you see, you know, when you look at the Winnipeg Jets? I mean, you saw them last Saturday. You cover the Penguins, like I just mentioned, so you were watching that game last Saturday afternoon, I'm sure. What did you see from the Winnipeg Jets? What have you seen in your times viewing them this season?
Yeah, I'll tell you, Mark Scheifele, to me, in recent games that I've seen, has been the best player on the ice. And when you look at him being a restricted free agent this summer, Jacob Trouba, Michael Hutchinson, as you mentioned, you've got a couple guys there that are definitely, they have a lot to play for. Maybe it's not winning games, but personally, they've got a lot invested in these next few games here. But when you compare them kind of head-to-head to a Montreal team that in an Eastern Conference and in specifically their division where there isn't the competition that maybe Winnipeg had to face this year, mm-hmm. it's a shame when you think of what Winnipeg could potentially be in an Eastern Conference had they just had a little bit of a softer schedule there. And so I think the Jets are at a point where this franchise has to decide what they are. What are they going to be for the next few years here? Do they kick into that next level? Or do they just kind of hover in the middle like maybe Dallas has done in recent years, where always good enough to be in the playoff picture, but never really good enough to be much more than that? And I think that's where this could be a critical offseason for Winnipeg.
I think most fans would certainly say that it will be. Yeah, you are sort of seeing a potential changing of the guard, especially with Andrew Ladd getting sent over to Chicago at the trade deadline. So it is an opportunity for the youth to come up. We know that Nikolaj Ehlers won't be in the Jets lineup tonight. Yeah. We're not sure how long he's going to be out for after. I mean, that ending to the game against the Islanders really did sum up the Winnipeg Jets season. You know, shots deflected off of Trouba, it hits Ehlers, cuts him, drops onto Okposo's stick, and he's got an open net to shoot it into.
Well, Drew, I don't even think it was necessarily the finish to the game. I think it was just the game as a whole. Not necessarily, you know, the puck going off of Ehlers, and obviously a very scary incident. Mm-hmm, we hope that Nikolaj Ehlers is going to come back this year and he's going to be okay. But just the way the game went, where the Jets outplayed the opposition for a big part of the game, got a lot of good chances, and just lost a close game. I mean, the Jets have had a good record this season, while going into the third period with the lead, but they've had, I don't know, I don't even think they've won a game when they've been trailing after two periods. So, I mean, it was the game as a whole. The Winnipeg Jets not being badly outplayed, I would argue, as I said earlier, that the Jets outplayed the Islanders. I mean, the Islanders were in a situation where that was their sixth of seven road games. Because they've got the circus at Barclays Center, so that's why they haven't been in Brooklyn there. But that Islanders team, and you know, I think Jack Capuano addressed it after the game, the Islanders team didn't play very well, and they still got the win, and that's sign of a really good
team.
That's
like Florida,
right?
Too, though, Ezzy. Same
right.
thing.
Yeah, Florida Islanders, well. those are basically your second and third best teams in the East after Washington. Maybe you throw in the Rangers in there, and I would say Pittsburgh is starting to come up
Tampa.
The way they've played in the second half of the season, but the Jets have just really struggled. They found ways to lose, unfortunately, and they're in a situation right now where they have to start thinking about the future there. And I think Mike makes a really good point for guys like Scheifele and Trouba, yeah. and the younger guys. You know, Lowry is another guy who's you know in that kind of situation mm-hmm. there. I mean, I think you know the Jets, even though they're not going to make the playoffs, they do have something to play for. Even the guys like Joel Armia, and we haven't talked a lot about him, but Marco Dano. I mean, these are guys that are still trying to make an impression on the coaches.
And I want to talk about Dano coming up because you know we've seen him for the first time in our you know that we've seen him live. So, what have you thought about Dano? You saw him for the last two games. You know, what were your impressions of him playing on the what's been dubbed the Lad Line with Lowry, Armia, and Dano?
Well, I think it's tough. Well, I mean, it's you know he comes over here. Yes, they drop him right into that line, and if you're the expectations are I think fairly high. I think the trade was received mostly well by fans and analysts. And I mean, I think if you're looking at his play so far, it's been disappointing. But it's been three games, right? So his pace needs to pick up. His skating and tempo needs to improve. And if he wants to be more effective. Now, again, I always have it's a tough time judging a guy like Marco Dano when you're playing with Adam Lowry. I just don't see Adam Lowry being a guy who's going to make wingers better. So, I mean, if you drop him with a different line, if you put Little, obviously he's injured, but Little or Scheifele or anybody in the middle, I think you see a different player in Dano likely. But I can see right now Chicago's problem. I mean, if Dano plays at the pace that he's playing at and doesn't pick it up, I mean, he wouldn't fit in Chicago, which is why they traded him. I mean, if he can't keep up with the other guys and be an effective player, that'll be a problem. So keeping up with Armia and Lowry won't be an issue, but I don't know if that's going to allow him to flourish. So it's only three games, and there's certainly room to improve. But you like to see his quickness improve a little bit because his size, he's not a big guy. And it's going to be tough to carve out a niche in the NHL.
Yeah. Mike, sorry, I'm going to bring Mike in on this. You probably saw him when he played with Columbus, not this past season, obviously, when he got traded to Chicago, but the year before where he had more than a cup of coffee with the Blue Jackets. What have you seen from Marco Dano in your times viewing him?
Yeah, he's a guy that comes in with a lot of youth international tournament experience. So he's been there. He's played in big games. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing if you're thinking of a Winnipeg team that hopefully starts to play in some big games in the future here. And what I've seen from him year to year is really in Columbus, I think I echo Rich's sentiments there, playing a more free-flowing game. He's a versatile player. I think that's a great thing in today's NHL, being able to move up and down the lineup and play almost all positions. But when he got into that Chicago system, didn't make the team out of camp even, but really struggled to just adapt to their system. And we've seen that before. Trevor Daley, a guy mm-hmm. that went from Dallas to Chicago, never really fit in, but needs that high-tempo style of hockey. So I think it's going to take time. These trades always take time for players to adapt to new places, but I think the potential is there if he can kind of take that up another level or two.
Yeah, Mike, you're right. And Rich said it, and you said it, and it's time. It's only been three games. Mm-hmm. Dano only played about 13 minutes on Thursday night. He's playing on the third line. I agree mm-hmm. with what both of you guys have said. I mean, you want him to be with a more skilled playmaking type of center, whether that's Mark Scheifele or Brian Little. I think the Jets envision Marco Dano being in the top six, but you're right. He has the ability to basically be that Swiss Army knife, play on any one of the lines, kind of similar to an Andrew Ladd. I think with Marco Dano, though, here early, what you, especially if you're a Jets fan, you have to be, I guess, cognizant of is Marco Dano's not a replacement for Andrew Ladd. Mm-hmm. And, you know, don't put too much pressure on this guy here coming in with 22 games or whatever it is left in the season, expecting him to, you know, put up 20 points and all of this. I mean, he's now getting used to a city and a system and all that. Sure, you want to see him definitely make strides, but I mean, this is a long-term prospect here. This isn't a guy that they just acquired and, you know, we're going to see what he does here over 20 games. I mean, Dano's a guy that they're penciling in for next year to be part of the forward core. So, I mean, don't expect too much out of him, but also, I mean, having said that, you expect him to do something because he was a guy that they acquired, and they expect him to eventually, I think, you know, be a producer in the top six.
I mean, people like to pick apart Andrew Ladd's game because people in Winnipeg are such hardcore hockey fans and know the game so well, and you watch a guy enough, you're going to find the warts in his game. But the strengths of Andrew Ladd's game, guys, I mean, plays all situations, power play, penalty kill, even strength. He's got a great shot, scores goals, and I mean, we can criticize all you want. Is he worth $6 million? But I mean, if you're talking about if a guy's worth $6 million, you're probably pretty sure he's worth $5 million, yeah. And that's a valuable player. So I think sometimes you overlook how valuable a guy like that was, even if he might not be what you hoped he would be.
Let's head to break. When we come back, more on the Winnipeg Jets. We'll talk about the Habs and the Oilers, the opponents this weekend. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
It's not easy. It's just something you got to come to work every day. That's all we can do is, come and, every day is a new day. And, all you can do is hope the guy next to you is going to, come to work too and work.
That was Dustin Byfuglien, Winnipeg Jets defenseman, speaking after practice yesterday. Some interesting comments, really, about the season, what it's like to be named to the preliminary roster of the Team USA for the World Cup of Hockey. We'll talk much more about the World Cup of Hockey coming up in the second hour today. This segment of the show brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information about Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. So, Byfuglien talking about the disappointing season. He doesn't talk often, but when he does, he's usually quite honest. He said, we obviously didn't expect to be here. We expected to be a middle-of-the-pack team. We sort of expected to be battling for one of the last playoff spots, which I appreciate in that he was honest. He didn't say, this team is a world beater. We're going to be Stanley Cup champions. But he did express disappointment with how the season has gone, obviously. And I can't criticize a guy like that. Buff doesn't talk that often, but when he does, he usually is pretty honest.
And yet, you have to understand that Dustin Byfuglien played on, I think, probably the best team in the past 10 years in the NHL, and that 2010 Blackhawks team.
Sure.
So he knows what top-end teams are like. When he looks around the locker room, he knows what the big end. So he's going to tell you that he thought the Jets would probably be in a similar spot to last year. And, of course, it's disappointing. And it is tough for these guys to I thought Dustin Byfuglien played with a fair amount of passion in the past couple of games.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to get up for these games. I mean, it's like the fans. I mean, if you're at Tuesday or Thursday's game and there's a penalty call, a hooking, I think it was a Blake Wheeler hooking call, and the fans are just like, all right, yeah, I guess that was hooking. And any game when the Jets have any chance, every penalty is the worst call ever.
Yeah.
And the fans are going crazy. And then in Thursday's game, yeah, all right, you don't hear anything. The fans, all right, sure, it's a penalty call.
And Richie, to your point earlier, this notion of soft tanking or tanking, it's ridiculous because if the Jets were tanking, that was a pretty creative way to tank. Like taking the game to overtime, leading the game 3-2, then letting the Islanders tie it up with 30 seconds left.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the Jets are going to still go out there and try to win every game. I mean, these guys have a ton of pride. They're by no means giving up on the season. So they're going to go out against Montreal tonight and against Edmonton on Sunday, and they're going to try to win. And are the possibility of making the playoffs basically slim to none? Yes, but these guys still have a lot of pride. They're competitive guys, and they're going to try to win hockey games.
I was watching Thursday's game, and you guys mentioned in the first segment about how impressive Mark Scheifele has been as of late, and I agree wholeheartedly. Are we sort of maybe underrating how good his year has been, possibly because of, it's sort of been broken up with all the injuries and everything else? I mean, he's up to 17 goals right now. And he's only played 52 games because of all the injuries. If he was fully healthy for all 82, he'd be up 25, 30 goals this year. Are we seeing sort of the evolution of Mark Scheifele's game into being that next, taking that next step?
25-30 goals at the end of the season, you mean?
At the end of the year. Yeah, not right now.
Yeah, no, he's had a really, he's progressed. You know, he's improved at aspects of his game that needed improving in terms of his skating when he came up, and his shot, which was good when he came up, has gotten better. So he's a hard worker, and you know that, and he cares and he wants to be better, and that's important. Doesn't always mean that the hardest worker is going to be. Make those improvements. Sometimes the guys who are just play just get better, and it's not a, there's not always that cause and effect. I think one thing about Scheifele, you note, and I think it goes back to Blake Wheeler, and Blake Wheeler's been getting a lot of credit this year in terms of how well he's played. Well, I don't think it's a coincidence that Mark Scheifele's had great success with Blake Wheeler.
Yeah, Richie, I think you make a good point, and you know, Drew, to your question earlier, yeah, if Mark Scheifele's healthy for the entire year, he probably sets career marks. Last year he had 49 points, and that was his career high in his second year. Mm-hmm. But I also think Mark Scheifele looks at, you know, Andrew Ladd being traded. He kind of looks at this team, and it's getting younger, and I think he kind of realizes that, you know, this is going to be his team eventually down the road. Not next year maybe, but, you know, a few years down the road. I mean, this is a guy that is already a big part of the core of the team, and the responsibilities for Mark Scheifele are just going to increase. You know, second line center, first line center, Brian Little and Mark Scheifele are kind of like 1A, 1B. But the point being that, yeah, I do think his game has evolved. Does he have to get better defensively and in the face-off circle? I think he does. But I think he has progressed every year. And I agree with Rich. You know, you hear about how hard he works with Gary Roberts in the offseason. This guy wants to get better and better. He's always the first guy on the ice. He puts all the work, you know, in the weight room, that type of stuff. Mark Scheifele, for young kids, is who you really want to model yourself after, right? And this guy, yeah, I think this guy has 30-goal, 35-goal, 80-point potential. I really do. You know, the third goal that he scored, you know, that put the Jets ahead momentarily on Thursday night, I mean, it was a great shot. Mark Scheifele, you know, has one of the more underrated shots in the NHL right now. So I do think possibly, Drew, his season has been underrated a little bit. And is it because he missed some time earlier in the season? Maybe. But I also think it also has to do with the fact that the Jets haven't been very good this year.
I think what I want to see out of a player like that is consistency. Mm-hmm. He has these stretches, especially in the offensive side, where he has scoring for a couple weeks and then disappears for a few weeks. And I think that's the next phase of a player like Scheifele. The Jets need that. They have a struggling power play this year. A big reason could be his inconsistencies. And so can he start to take that next step next year, moving into a guy that you can rely on night in and night out to either get that big goal when you're trailing in the third period, convert on a power play, give yourself that consistent production? That's what makes kind of those truly 80-point players elite, is that consistency over the course of a full season.
And Mike made an interesting point of the last 20 games have an effect on Scheifele in terms of his contract. Next year's a different story. Like, sure. Mark Scheifele's off entry level. So whatever, if they sign him to a two-year deal or a long-term deal, the pressure and the expectations totally change. If he signs a long-term deal for $5 million a year, for example, suddenly the slump for 2 weeks in the middle of the season is under the microscope. Now, well, he's still entry level. He's still young. He's still developing. I mean, that perspective changes. I mean, it's funny. I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. Even the perspective of Scheifele being young versus John Tavares. Scheifele was only drafted 2 years after John Tavares, but because he stayed the 2 years in the OHL, mm-hmm. which, you know, benefited him, I think your perspective of his development is different than a guy like that.
Shifting our focus to this weekend's opponents, Connor McDavid makes his only visit to MTS Center on Sunday night. And I mean, I know I'm excited. You guys are all excited to see Connor McDavid live and in person. You know, is there a particular aspect of his game that you're looking to see that you're more interested in than another aspect? Is it the skating, first and foremost?
I would say basically every aspect of his game. I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit, and, you know, we'll get Mike in here in a second, but you know, we were there in Florida when he was drafted. Dave Minuk and I were there in Florida. And, you know, he was hyped up quite a bit for, 3 years leading up to the draft. And, you know, Connor McDavid versus Jack Eichel, everything like that. You know, I've watched him play quite a bit this year, and everybody's seen him on the highlights. But, I mean, he's the total package, Drew. He really is. And if you want to say speed, skill, whatever, for me, it, you know, and I know Richie's a big Gretzky guy. How can you not be? But the vision, too, and the way he makes other players around him better. So basically just watch everything about Connor McDavid, because he's the complete package.
Ezzy, when you think of that, making players better, I mean, Jordan Eberle was on the trade block without Connor McDavid. Now he's untouchable. Neil Yakupov was I think, invisible. And until McDavid gets back, he hops on that line. Now he's productive all of a sudden. And that's one of, I mean, you see the speed, you see the skills, the hands at that level of hockey. But I think making the team better is exactly what Edmonton needed and never got from, you know, Taylor Hall has a great set of skills himself, but I don't think he took that roster and took it to the next level like McDavid's been doing so far.
I mean, to be able to do things that he does at full speed, I mean, very few players, and Mike and I were talking about this yesterday, very few players are able to, like, if you have the speed, usually you're doing it too quickly, and people can't keep up. And, you know, Crosby's had that problem in terms of some of his people keeping up with where he's thinking and the pace of his game. McDavid just has these, the stick handling and the moves of a player is a little bit slower, but he's able to do that at full speed. He has the vision. It's a full package. So everybody I've talked to leading up to Sunday, this weekend is really about Connor McDavid. I mean, the Habs are the Habs. So, I mean, the Habs are going to have a great atmosphere in there because you're going to have so many Habs fans.
Sure.
But this weekend is really about Connor McDavid and looking forward to having him be an annual ticket that, you know, comes through town.
One interesting thing about McDavid is he had that injury midseason, but still eligible for some of his rookie bonuses this year. And so the Oilers have 15 games left right now to hit McDavid's goal bonus. He needs 7 goals in those 15 games. He needs 14 assists to hit another bonus. So you see where his scoring, if you look over the last month or two, has been incredible. And now you start to see he's got that extra motivation
it
as well.
Goes to show that if he'd been healthy for the entire season, he probably would have reached those bonuses after game about 30 at the beginning of the year, as opposed to having it stretch out towards the last little bit here at the end of the season. But he's a remarkable talent, and that's, you know, you just don't get to see players like that. He's a generational talent. So he's the, you know, since, you know, Crosby, he's been, you know, it's been Crosby and now it's McDavid.
He missed 37 games and he's fifth on the team in scoring.
Yeah, well,
I mean
they have a lot of offensive talent. Yeah. I mean, make no mistake. Like, it's not a team that lacks offense. We know that it's not a team that lacks offensive talent. It's not like you're talking about some of the teams in the bottom who really don't have that top end skill. Taylor Hall, I know Nugent Hopkins is hurt.
Sure.
Mike mentioned Eberle. He was obviously hurt to start the season. Yakupov, he's been hurt. So they've had a lot of injuries, but all that talent, I mean, we know all those top picks.
Yeah, well, the Jets did a good job against the Oilers. It was about maybe 3 weeks ago or a month ago on a Saturday night where they won in the shootout, Pavlik's return to the Jets' goal. So they're looking to do another similar good defensive job against the Oilers come Sunday night and, of course, tonight against the Habs. The rare home back-to-back situation.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see this very often where you have a back-to-back with no travel involved.
Well, the Jets are getting, you know, and also the other thing, I don't know if this has the same effect as it used to in terms of national games, but the Jets are playing 2 games nationally, broadcast throughout Canada. You get a little more exposure. You know, friends watching back home for the Canadian guys, and so, you know, it's maybe something that
particularly the young players, guys. You know, Josh Morrissey gets called up. We don't know if he's going to be in the lineup tonight or tomorrow. You know, that we'll find out after Coach Maurice speaks coming up in the next, you know, 30 minutes or 45 minutes. You know, J.C. LePond, does he get into the lineup? You'd expect that he probably would. I can't imagine why they'd go with Matt Halaschuk over and healthy scratch LePond. But
I'd agree with that.
You know, we'll find out soon enough what the Jets' lines look like for this weekend, or at least tonight against Montreal. Let's head to break. We'll bring in Amanda Stein from our sister station, TSN 690. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Saturday morning here on TSN 1290, Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg, the usual crew of IllegalCurve.com, and we're joined in studio for the entirety of the program by Mike Colligan, who covers the NHL for Forbes Sports Money, covers the Pittsburgh Penguins as well. You can reach us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Amanda Stein. Amanda is a Montreal Canadiens reporter for TSN 690. She's also a Full House aficionado.
Fuller House.
Full and Fuller House. Amanda, good morning. Welcome to the program.
I feel like I've entered a nightmare with this song.
You only made it, what'd you say, 4.5 minutes into Fuller House? Is that right?
I think it was 4 minutes and 32 seconds.
And
yeah.
Then, And then you just had enough at that point in time?
I felt so sick and ill. I was just like, I can't even bear to watch this. What a nightmare that show is, and what a disaster of a reboot. Yeah.
Now, Amanda, obviously you follow us on Twitter. I'm not sure if you've seen the photo going back about 15 years ago, but when Illegal Curve had the opportunity to play hockey with Dave Coulier back when he was here in Winnipeg about 15 years ago.
That's very cool. Like, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with, you know, the people who are involved, just the, like, corniness and cheesiness.
Yes.
And I think in that first 4 minutes and 32 seconds, and I like to be very precise about that.
No kidding.
Just know when I had to cut it off. Every single character that walked into the scene all said their, you know, catchphrases from years and years ago within that first 4 minutes. And I was like, you know what? I'm done. I can't do this.
My girlfriend forced me to watch. Well, maybe she didn't force. I wanted to see what this show was like. So I watched episodes 2 and 3. I didn't see episode 1. But episode 2, Dave Coulier comes out in the Stevie Eiserman jersey, the same jersey he wore when he played hockey with us 15 years ago.
There you go.
Very cool. I did see that he does wear that jersey a couple times in some screen grabs that I saw. So maybe that's like the best part of the show, is that he still, you know, has that Eiserman jersey on. But really, I can't even stress enough how much I don't suggest this show. And I'm getting, like, flack from my station. Some guys at my station are telling me to give it a chance and that they all really loved it, and that I'm the crazy one.
Well,
it's really weird and backwards. I'm not going to lie.
I don't even know where to go with that. I mean, that's as much Fuller House analysis as we probably need at this point in time. Amanda Stein's our guest. She covers the Montreal Canadiens for TSN 690, our sister station there in Montreal. Now, Amanda, the Jets and the Habs tonight here in Winnipeg, the Habs' only visit to town. A disappointing year, to put it mildly, for both teams. You know, we were talking earlier in the program about sort of what the Jets are looking to get out of these last 15 games this season. From a Habs perspective, what do you think that they're trying to accomplish in these last, and as they wind down the stretch here in the last month of the season before this disappointing year comes to an end?
Yeah, I think they've got about 18 games left at this point, and really the only way you can look at it is an evaluation period. So, you know, more so than a training camp, this is an evaluation camp, because Michel Therrien now has a lot of young players that he has in his lineup, which is kind of an unusual scenario for Therrien, who, you know, has been criticized for his use of younger players, maybe not trusting them because they don't have the defensive game down as much. But now he's sort of forced this hand with young guys like Michael McCarron's 20-year-old center, Philippe Danault, who came over in a trade with Dale Weiss in Chicago, and as well as Stéphane Matteau with the New Jersey Devils for Devontae Smith-Pelly. So now he sort of has his hand forced to play these young players. And really what we're seeing for me is this type of evaluation period to see what they have in terms of, you know, not only character but talent. Because with Carey Price having gone down, it's really allowed them to see the core makeup of their team and who fits into this and who can rise above and who doesn't. And that's really, you know, as much as we talk about the last 18 games, it's really been like that for the last 3 months.
So, Amanda, in episode 2, scene 2 of a Fuller House. Just kidding. You know, you mentioned Carey Price there. What are the chances that we see Carey Price again this season, or have the Habs decided yet that they're going to shut him down?
No, they're not going to shut him down. He actually spoke for the first time at length about his injury, or, you know, giving what minor details he would actually allow earlier this week. And I was at the press conference, and he said that there is a good chance that he will play at least one or two games at this point in the season. So, you know, I think it's more so he wants to really get in these games if he's 100%, which is the only way he'll get into play, so that he doesn't have to go through the entire summer thinking about how his lower body injury, which many speculate is his knee in some capacity, will hold up. I think that it's just, you know, to avoid that mental block of 4 months of not playing in the off season. You know, that takes him to almost a year not playing. So I do imagine that if he does get to 100%, and it looks that way, he started taking shots for the first time in 3 months earlier this week, that they will give him a chance. There's no reason not to. If his injury is at 100%, it's never going to get to 110%. So if he's healthy, you put him in there to try and, you know, avoid the situation of wondering all summer how he's going to hold up when he eventually plays again.
Amanda, Montreal is a team that under Marc Bergevin has always kind of been on the upswing. 2 years ago, jumping 40 points in the standings, going to the conference finals, another 110-point season after that. Were the expectations put a little bit too high based on that success? You know, we saw that with Tampa Bay a few years ago where that unlikely run set the standard and ultimately the disappointment of the fan base. Is that same feel in Montreal as well?
I mean, there's definitely a disappointment, especially when you consider the fact that they started at 10-0, and everyone was already lining up along St. Catherine Street for that parade. But I think so, because you're absolutely right. The trajectory has always been upwards, and this is the first time we've watched the team really face a lot of scrutiny, a lot of down points in their season, going through lengthy losing streaks, to say the least. And it's been interesting to watch how the management has either helped or not helped the team. And I think at first, when they first started going through this slump at the beginning of December, when things really started to take a turn for the worse, there was a lot of hope in this city that it would just be, I guess, it wouldn't last too long. They'd be able to come out of it. But right now, the feeling I get here is just sort of this resolution from fans that this is the scenario that they're at. It's the first time in the Bergevin-Therrien regime where you're hearing people talk about wanting them to lose games because that's better for the team to, you know, secure themselves a higher draft pick. And when they're winning games, they're upset because, you know, they're creeping up in the standings and their likelihood of making the playoffs is something at like 4%. So this is the first time we've experienced under this regime this type of attitude. And, you know, it sort of plays in both of their hands. You know, the fans obviously had this expectation of being in the playoffs, because that's what they, you know, the standard that they've set. And Bergevin didn't really do very much when Carey Price went down to make sure that they continued on the right course. They had built themselves such a great lead. You know, if you think about the type of lead that they had at the beginning of the season, and everyone was saying, you know, oh, this is good to bank it for the end of the year. You know, they can sort of cruise into the playoffs and not have to worry, rest some guys. It's unbelievable to think what type of fall that this team has taken, which is the worst in franchise history.
Man, why don't you think, when the Habs made the Devontae Smith-Pelly trade for Jiří Sekáš last year, the thought was that help him along the boards, a bigger body, they had probably too many players like Sekáš. Why didn't Smith-Pelly work out there?
I think a couple of reasons. I think there was a lot of criticism about Devontae Smith-Pelly and his size, in that he was too heavy, he was carrying too much weight, he was a little slower than the rest of the guys. When you think about Montreal, they've always prided themselves on being fast and quick and not necessarily, the big body slamming across the boards and all that. But and I think he just fell out of favor with Michel Therrien, because he couldn't provide that type of spark immediately. He couldn't keep up. And the one thing that I've learned about watching Michel Therrien is that if you quickly fall out of Michel Therrien, it is so difficult to get back in his good graces, no matter what you do. And it just seems like it was kind of like a Jiří Sekáš situation, where he fell out of favor with the coach and was never able to climb back out, you know, climb back into the good graces. And so they try and turn him for something new. And, you know, the Stéphane Matteau, that's another project. And I don't know how well suited he's going to be also for Michel Therrien, and especially having a Francophone name, that's going to be a tough scenario.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Amanda Stein. Amanda covers the Habs for our sister station, TSN 690 in Montreal. Amanda, you mentioned Michel Therrien in a couple of different answers. Is he down to his last sort of month as Montreal Canadiens head coach, or is there a possibility that Marc Bergevin can bring him back as head coach next season?
Oh, there's a possibility. I mean, if you look at how Marc Bergevin has talked about Michel Therrien over the course of the year, calling him his foxhole guy, you know, that's sort of a term that has been used over and over again here in Montreal since Bergevin was pressed earlier on this year when the downfall started to happen about whether he's going to keep his coaching staff in place. You know, he said that if there's a person I want in a foxhole with me, that is Michel Therrien. So I think that he's on his last string. But it's sort of a 50-50 thing, and maybe that's a bit of a cop-out answer. But if you talk to people around Montreal, you know, whether it be the fans or whether it be people in the media, it's really split down the middle, because it seems that there's such a devout loyalty between GM and coach that it's almost unimaginable that he would fire him based on the fact that they've been missing their all-star goaltender. And I think for me, when I think about it, if Michel Therrien does come back, no matter how miserable this year has been, they always have had this scapegoat of Carey Price. Well, we didn't have our best player. We didn't have the best player in the world on our team. And that's one of the reasons why we're going to give Michel another chance to right the ship, because if you think about the last 2 years, how well they've done with Carey. Whether that's, you know, the right way to go about it, I don't know. But what I do know is that a lot of people are growing tired and are worried about the scenario of having a lot of younger players, like I mentioned before, Michael McCarron, even Alex Galchenyuk, and developing under Michel Therrien seems to be a critical issue. But Michel Therrien and Marc Bergevin seem to have this incredible loyalty to one another that I wouldn't be surprised if Therrien comes back, but on a very short leash next year.
Amanda, what was the reaction like there in Montreal with PK Subban not being named one of the starting four defensemen for Team Canada? are people a little bit upset, surprised, or do people know that there's a good chance that he's still going to be named to the roster after they name the next three defensemen?
I think, like, once the storm settles of hearing that he's not part of the four defensemen, I think there'll be that realization that he does still have a chance to make that final roster. I believe it's in June that they announce it. But, you know, I don't want to use the word anger, but there was definitely disappointment because for a lot of people, PK Subban is the star. He's been one of their most consistent players this year, and he's sort of this prized possession in a way. But on the flip side of that is that he also has a lot of his detractors. And I think if you look at it from a realistic point of view, if you look at the Canadian roster, the four defensemen that they've chosen so far anyways on this initial roster, you can't argue against that. And Carey Price even said that, you know, you can't argue against what type of stud those four guys are, and there will be a chance for Subban to make that roster. I mean, people are disappointed because you always want your guy on the team. And I think there's that feeling of PK Subban and that he's gotten slighted by Team Canada before. You know, with the Olympics, it was, you know, the same type of feeling. He was that extra defenseman and he played that role really well, but he's also developed since then. But I imagine that he has a good chance of making that roster. But, you know, he's a high risk, high reward kind of guy, and that's not really how Team Canada rolls.
Amanda, final question. You know, to me, one of the keys to the season for the Habs was going to be Alex Galchenyuk. He's got 19 goals, 39 mm-hmm. points in 65 games. What is Alex Galchenyuk?
He is their most talented offensive weapon who perhaps is not being used in the best possible way for him to succeed. And I think that the coaching staff would disagree with that because they always say, and the GM for that matter, they're always saying that they're putting him on the wing. And keep in mind, he was drafted to be their number one scoring center, mm-hmm. You know, their big center, but he's really played the majority of his career so far on that wing. He is their most highly talented guy, and I worry about how he's being used, because if, you know, you want him to be that number two or that number one with Max Pacioretty in terms of your offensive power, I don't know how much the wing is going to help him in that respect. But it's, you know, he's been a really hot debate ever since he's really joined the team because he's been on that wing. And there's been discussions that he's asked to be on the wing because he feels more comfortable. But if you want him to become that center, you have to give him that opportunity. And there have been these times where Therrien has put him in that place, but maybe defensively hasn't sort of nailed down that position. And you really have to be a lot more highly aware of your scenario, your surroundings when you're playing center on a top line. And again, it goes back to that trust factor that Michel Therrien doesn't seem to have in a lot of his young players. And it's sort of this catch-22 is if you don't give him that opportunity, he's never going to learn it, right? But they don't want to give him that opportunity because they're scared of, you know, how that might affect the standings. And right now, I mean, I don't know if ever under Michel Therrien that this player will end up as a centerman.
Amanda
Unfortunately,
Stein,
right?
Yeah. Amanda Stein covers the Montreal Canadiens for TSN 690. She's a Four House aficionado, and she's got the nicest penmanship in the National Hockey League media.
You.
Amanda, thanks.
I'm an aficionado of the first 4 minutes and 32 seconds of Fuller House.
Well, that's more than we can say over here in this studio, so it's good enough for us.
Amanda, I don't know what you're doing today, but could you possibly send us some St. Viateur bagels?
I can give it a shot. My favorite coffee shop, Olympico, is right next to St. Theodore Bagel, so I'm always around there. I can see what I can do, guys.
Richie and I lived in Montreal for a couple of months, and we used to always go there. We were part of the scene there in Montreal.
Scene, yeah.
The scene, yeah. They were the real part of the scene. Amanda, thank you for joining us this morning.
No problem. I do love, guys, how every time I'm on the show, St. Theodore Bagels do come up in some capacity.
Yeah. We didn't talk about Schwartz's, though. That's normally where we go with that
yeah,
as well.
True, too.
We'll save that for the next time.
I'm getting hungry.
Thank you, Amanda.
Take care, guys.
Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Pleased to be joined in studio by Mike Colligan. Mike covers the NHL for Forbes Sports Money. He also is intimately familiar with the Pittsburgh Penguins organization. So we'll spend the next few minutes talking about the Penguins, Mike. An interesting column up on TSN.ca this week by Travis Yost, who is the TSN.ca sort of analytics guy, saying that the Penguins are actually a bit of a dark horse. They're a real playoff threat, he says, in that, you know, people aren't really talking about them. They're not really noticing them. But he says that ever since they made the coaching change in December, when they dismissed Mike Johnson and they brought in Mike Sullivan as head coach, that the Penguins have been playing much better hockey since that point in time. I'll start, obviously, with you on this one. You know, your impressions on the Penguins since they've made that coaching change, you know, do you agree with Travis in that their play has been improved dramatically? And do you see the Penguins as a playoff threat, you know, a month out from the Stanley Cup playoffs? It looks fairly clear that they're going to be a playoff team, barring a real significant collapse. But, you know, do you think that they could be a threat in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, and I remember we've talked for 2 years now about Mike Johnston and the former head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and my impressions from about the first week of him being there was it was just an oversimplified, almost high school hockey type of system that they were using, and you could see where the team bought in for a few months last year, and then down the stretch last season had one of the worst collapses I think that we've seen in a while, and mm-hmm. a team that just snuck into the playoffs on the last day of the year this year came out and looked even less engaged from that standpoint, and ultimately cost Mike Johnson his job, despite the Penguins not being that bad record-wise. But you could just see this was a team where Sidney Crosby was disengaged, the roster was just not performing up to expectations. Totally different, agreed. Very different under Mike Sullivan now. And you see a team that's finally taking advantage of its strengths. That's speed. That's aggressive hockey. This is never going to be a team that wins 2-1 games. So I think when you start to look to the playoffs and you think back to some teams that have been structured that way, like Washington from a few years ago, I think it makes Pittsburgh capable of beating anyone, but not capable of winning a Stanley Cup. They'd have to string together four straight rounds of really high-scoring hockey, and you run into a hot goaltender at some point. At some point, your special teams don't come through. So I think it makes them very dangerous, but not a serious cup contender in my mind.
And, Mike, I think you know a lot of the focus has been on Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, and rightly so. Those are still two of the best players in the NHL, and Crosby, I believe, is second in the NHL in points since early February, so he's really turned his season around. But I think there really hasn't been enough focus on Marc-Andre Fleury, and you know, you just mentioned hot goaltending, but mm-hmm. you know, Marc-Andre Fleury right now, you look at his numbers, and you know, he's top 10 in wins, top 10 in goals against average. You know, he's had another solid year, and Pittsburgh's defense has really been the issue over the especially since they won the Stanley Cup. It's really been a work in progress, and Olli Mäta's obviously been a great discovery for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and they went out and they acquired Justin Schultz to kind of add some speed. But don't you think that, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury deserves a lot of credit for the way he's played this year?
With a defense in front of him that isn't great, and I think we'll see that in the playoffs when they start to play some good teams, this is not a defense that is really deep like a Washington or some of the other better teams in the Western Conference. But I agree, Fleury has had his best season so far in his career, and they gave him a contract extension. He's got three more years at close to $6 million, but it creates a really interesting question for them. Younger goaltender Matt Murray mm-hmm. has been coming up, dominating the American League, and now
named to the team, the Young Stars team for the upcoming World Cup of Hockey. Sorry for jumping in there.
Many feel that he was the most sought after goaltender at the trade deadline. You know, when you look at that contract situation for Fleury, where does Murray fit in for the Penguins? What do they do? Do they hang on to Fleury as he gets into his 30s and hope that Murray is comfortable just sitting in a backup chair for the next 3 years? Or do they potentially move Fleury in the next season or two here and give the reins to Matt Murray? I think that's going to be a bigger question longer term for this Penguins team.
And depending on who's in charge at that time, are they going to want the cap flexibility of having Fleury off the books with so many long-term deals and big money contracts? I mean, you look at it, they have a lot of money locked up. Now, of course, you know, Crosby, Malkin, you're not going to be upset about it, though they're getting older, and Letang, and you just signed Mata. But the idea that, you know, Fleury on the books here for another 3 years after this at 5.75, does that give them the flexibility for an extra, you know, $5 to $6 million to spend elsewhere if you bring in a young netminder? So,
in the return you would get potentially for whether you're trading Murray or Fleury, could get a return. This is a system that I'm not a prospects expert, but I look around at some of the other teams. I would put them in the bottom five of the league right now. Not a lot is coming, and so they need to replenish that at some point. Even if they're just reloading, they need those assets like a Chicago Blackhawks have, where you can afford to get rid of some of your veterans, whether it's Chris Kunitz or Pascal Dupuy, now effectively retired. They need the flexibility to bring in some of those younger guys, and I think a goaltender trade might give them that.
Well, you know, they tried to do that, you know, by getting Plotnikov? Is that the Russian player that they brought over this offseason? Season trying to, you know, catch lightning in a bottle like the Blackhawks were able to do with Panarin, and it obviously didn't pan out. Of course they're different players, but you know, that's the logic there is you try and get one of those cheap guys to come in. It's going to be hard to sort of replenish that system. They don't have a first round pick this year. They have 2 seconds and no third round pick as well. You know, the Kessel trade, I mean, he's sort of just going through the motions. Is it a regrettable decision right now? Is that going to be an albatross on this organization for the next 5-6 years?
I think so. This is one we're going to look in 5 years and see a Phil Kessel that is probably less engaged than now. And that's not any knock against him, but at the time I remember thinking this was not a team that was one Phil Kessel away from the Stanley Cup. So in a vacuum, maybe you can justify that trade and you say, hey, they needed another piece and this was a good opportunity if you feel that strongly about Phil Kessel. But it wasn't a one move away from a cup team, and therefore I think it just set them back. They lost a first round pick. They've lost some very talented players like Kasperi Kapanen that could have been moving into the lineup over the next few years at a very cost controlled salary, as opposed to the $6.8 million for Kessel right now. That gets more painful as he continues to move on into his older age, and I think it's going to put the Penguins in a bit of a problem right now.
Real quick, I mean, we're really getting to the point where, you know, Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, they're entering into the latter parts of their prime, still great players, of course, but they're not what they, you know, they're not, you know, 5 years younger. I mean, are we really looking at the situation where one Stanley Cup is reality for both Crosby and Malkin?
I think so. I think this is a team where the, you know, it's hard to believe, but I think the window has closed, at least on this current group. So there's an opportunity there to reload. And again, we bring up the Chicago Blackhawks as kind of the model franchise from that standpoint. We'll see what they do now with Taves and Kane moving into kind of the Crosby, Malkin cap hit level. And that will get tougher and tougher for Stan Bowman to navigate. But for the Penguins, I think this could be the last season, especially if they face, let's say, a Washington in the first round, get bounced pretty easily, which I think is possible when you look at what a class team Washington is. Mm-hmm. This could be a team that's due for some big changes in the offseason that's probably moving one of the big stars in Crosby, Malkin, Letang, or Fleury.
And Mike, you'd know this better than we would because you watch the Penguins more than we do. But, you know, I look at this Penguins team, and if I'm the Washington Capitals, and I know, you know, they're a very strong team and really top to bottom, Holtby should win the Vezina. I mean, as you mentioned, the defense is very good. They've probably got the best collections of forwards in the NHL, with maybe the exception of the Chicago Blackhawks. I still wouldn't want to play them in the first round, though. And, you know, we talked a lot about Crosby and Malkin. Crosby's been red hot since early February over the last month. Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, he's got 5 shutouts this year. We talked about how good he's been. And that defense, you can see, is kind of starting to come, you know, into shape there with Trevor Daley and, you know, Derek Pouliot's been, you know, playing more, and Ian Cole can't get into the lineup. So I still wouldn't want to play the Pittsburgh Penguins just because they have those game breakers. Chris Letang's having a great year. I mean, I don't think Washington is, if they do play Washington, for example, I wouldn't necessarily say that Washington's going to roll over Pittsburgh and beat them in four or five games. I still think Pittsburgh will give Washington a really good run for their money.
As he's buying into the Penguins still, we'll see in about 5 weeks' time when the playoffs get underway. Let's head to break. When we come back, we shift our focus to the World Cup of Hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Again, it's just a fabulous collection of players, Al, and I think, you know, when you put all that together and the size and the speed and the skill level, you know, at every position, the competence of the goaltending, for sure. You put that on 200 by 85, and, I mean, it's hockey on steroids, quite honestly, with all due respect to the analogy. The bottom line is that this is just going to be a fabulous event, and the National Hockey League and the PA have certainly done it right, you know, with you know, this type of an event here in Toronto, Al. I just think it's going to be outstanding.
That is Hockey Canada Executive Director Tom Rennie talking about the World Cup of Hockey. Earlier this week, Team Canada and all of the other seven, well, I guess they're not seven nations, the other five nations and then the two hybrid teams were announced earlier this week, Wednesday to be exact, for the upcoming World Cup of Hockey. September, unfortunately, only in Toronto. This segment of the show brought to you by Zappia Group Realty, Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Team Canada was announced, at least the initial 16 team members were announced. The three goaltenders, Corey Crawford, Braden Holtby, and Carey Price. Four defensemen, Drew Doughty, Duncan Keith, Mark-Edward Vlasic, and Shea Weber. And then you have nine forwards, Jamie Benn, Patrice Bergeron, and Jeff Carter. Sidney Crosby, Ryan Getzlaff, and Tyler Seguin. Steven Stamkos, John Tavares, and Jonathan Toews. A stacked Team Canada. I would assume they're going to be your favorites entering into the tournament.
Yeah, I think that would be fair to say, Drew. I mean, coming off of Sochi and it's the roster that they put out here, I would say that Team Canada would be the pretty strong favorite.
How different do you think this tournament is going to be being played on the NHL ice surface as compared to that of in Sochi, where, you know, in Sochi, Team Canada held the puck the entire tournament. It was pretty much on their stick the entirety of every game, and that's why they could win 1-0 and 2-1 because they were that dominant defensively. Do you think that's going to be different this year with it being on the NHL ice surface rather than the international ice surface?
Yeah, there's less room out there, so the ability to kind of hold the puck and cause trouble that way is going to be you're not able to do that as much as you would be in the on the big ice. So it'll be a change. I'm not sure if it's a disadvantage at all. I mean, that's what these guys are used to playing. These guys are all dominant players in the National Hockey League level by playing on NHL ice surfaces. Mm-hmm. So I know that the Team Canada seem to adjust maybe better than some of the other teams, maybe the Americans in terms of that style and bringing in Ralph Kruger and all that stuff. But I wouldn't be too concerned about it, the adjustment back.
Guys, I might be biased, but I like the North American-sized ice surface better than the international ice surface.
Sure.
I mean, I can appreciate international hockey, but again, maybe because we're here in Canada and, you know, we're used to it, I think it does change the strategy. I mean, there's definitely more room out there, and it almost creates less offense by having more room out there, right?
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, Drew, I mean, the semifinal, Canada and Sweden, the final, Canada-Sweden, you know, we didn't see very many goals, right? And in the semifinals, same thing. We didn't see a lot of goals. And, you know, you mentioned Team Canada here, and there are going to be, you know, some, I guess, notable omissions. But when I look at this group, the only real notable omissions or maybe surprises, I wasn't surprised by any of the forwards. I think we'd all agree. If you look at that group of forwards, I mean, there's nobody that was really...
Are you surprised Corey Perry's not there?
No, but, I mean, Corey Perry, I think, will still be named to the team. So, I mean, this is there's still four more forwards to come, right? So I still think that there's a good chance that he's on the team. But, I mean, the only, I guess, debate I think that you can have with this Team Canada roster is the third goalie. I mean, everybody knew that Carey Price and Braden Holtby were going to be there. I think Marc-Andre Fleury and Roberto Luongo had a good shot at being the third goalie. But Corey Crawford earned it, and he's got two Stanley Cups. And then maybe Mark-Edward Vlasic, you're a little bit surprised, guys. But if you've watched the San Jose Sharks play this year, Mark-Edward Vlasic is a top 10 defenseman in the NHL, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he does everything well. So I wasn't that surprised. And again, you know, we just talked to Amanda Steyn about it last segment. A guy like PK Subban, he can still make the team. So, I mean, this isn't the final roster. There's still seven players to be named. But when you look at that group of forwards, I mean, Ryan Getzlaff, Tyler Seguin, Sidney Crosby, John Tavares, Jonathan Toews, I mean, who of those players are you going to leave off?
Mark Bergevin, Montreal GM, is part of the management team, so I think that makes it even more surprising that a guy like PK Subban was not included. But I also go back to the North American ice there. You know, you don't need that dynamic player if you're playing on a smaller ice surface, and I think we're going to see a little more structure and system in this type of hockey. And so if you need a more balanced lineup, as opposed to a team of all-stars, I think we've seen where some of the more talented teams have gotten into trouble without having role players. You know, when you have first-line guys that are thrust into kind of a third or fourth line checking role, that can sometimes not go over well. Mm-hmm. But Corey Perry, to me, was the biggest snub so far. The way he's been playing right now, and maybe these decisions were made a little further back, but I think he is a guy that is just unstoppable. Back to kind of his MVP season a few years ago, and with the Ducks playing like there are, I wouldn't be surprised he's an absolute lock when it comes to the final rosters.
The only, I mean, I guess Corey Crawford, you know, he is played his way onto that third spot.
Sure.
I mean,
you're never going to see him in game action.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I have a huge issue with that. The only surprise for me, and I'm probably in the minority here, was Shea Weber. Just in my watching Shea Weber, I don't see the same effective player as he was a couple of years ago. Again, that might just be me. And just because the right side is so, I know Ezzie disagrees, but so strong the right side, I was just surprised that they would put him there just because the competition is fierce. And if you look at the guys that we talk about, Pietrangelo wasn't on the team, fine. Subban wasn't on the team, Brent Burns, those kind of players. I'm just surprised that he was named so early as compared to some of those guys.
I think Weber, Keith, and Doughty were always locks.
I don't disagree.
I don't think there was any conversation.
I don't disagree with you. I heard Doug Armstrong talk about it. It didn't seem like they, you know, they put a, like they decided that these, a lot of these guys were locks, as he. So we're nitpicking. We're talking about one of the best defensemen, you know, in the league. I'm surprised just because I think, in my viewing, his play recently hasn't been as effective as I thought it was a couple of years ago.
What about Jeff Carter being on the team?
I mean, Jeff Carter's a guy I was talking about way before the Olympics. If you remember that, Drew.
I remember.
Why? Because he's a great kind of player for an Olympic or World Cup team. Why? Plays center, plays wing, can kill penalties, can play power play, skates like the wind, can take faceoffs, defensively responsible. What about? That's a coach's dream.
Most importantly, Richie, he's a sniper.
He can shoot the puck. Exactly. But a coach's dream in that you can use him anywhere. So Jeff Carter, you know, you saw it last time. You're having trouble first line, not creating a bunch. What? Put some speed, throw him on the right wing. You're having trouble, you want to create some speed through the middle, you're going to drop him third line center. He can play with different guys. I think, you know, and he doesn't, and he's a guy that coaches want to have. And a lot of the players on this team are centers, and they're going to get thrust to the wing, and some of them have played the wing before. Stamkos, you know, I guess Sagan, cup of coffee, Bergeron with Crosby before.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a lot of centers, so they have to be able to play wing. So I think he just gives you that much versatility.
And you know that's Mike Babcock's philosophy. That's the way he thinks of structuring a lineup, and especially in international competition. I mean, a guy that I think, now that I look at the defense group, when you have Duncan Keith there, I wonder, where's Brent Seabrook?
Mm-hmm.
And the familiarity, especially when you have these compressed tournaments where chemistry can be so critical. You know, we saw Chris Kunitz make Team Canada a couple years ago. Just because of his ability to play with Sidney Crosby, I wonder if we see Seabrook thrown onto that roster too, just to be able to play on a pair with Keith.
Well, I mean, he was there in Sochi, so you would probably expect that he's going to be going.
Seabrook wasn't in Sochi, I thought.
No, did they get that wrong? My apologies then. But
Subban was a 7, and Hamhuis was.
Hamhuis was. That's right.
Seabrook was in 2010.
2010. Okay, yeah. Sorry, that's where I got my years confused.
And we didn't mention Chris Letang. I know Mike obviously sees Chris Letang play a lot. Chris Letang. So the right side, I mean, is pretty darn deep. And Mike Babcock. Mike talks about flexibility, and that's what he wants.
Right.
Mike Babcock wants left right.
Yes.
And Doug Armstrong came out, and it was said in 2014. Doug Armstrong came out and said it 2 days ago. Mike Babcock wants left right.
Well, and that was one of the reasons why Hamhuis made the team in Sochi, is because he could play on that left side. And
right.
I mean, that's arguably where, I mean, saying they're weaker on the left side. I mean,
they are, yeah. But because their right side's so dominant. But you have guys now this time around, Mark Giordano,
yep.
Serious consideration, obviously.
Yep.
Names you're seeing, you know, that's a name.
Brent
I think.
Burns.
Well, Brent Burns is a right side guy, is he? But he's a guy who Giordano can play is playing the left side. T.J. Brody's a left shooting guy who plays
Brent
the
Burns
right
can
side.
Still make it as a right shot.
For sure.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, but you're looking at the left side competition, and Bo Meester was there last time with Pietrangelo.
Mm-hmm.
That's still weaker than the right side, but only because the right side, as you said, is so dominant. If you took the best defenseman in Canada, as he's pointing, talks about Brent Burns, if you took the best eight defensemen in Canada, you'd probably have five right side guys.
Right.
But it's like the Jets.
Too many guys on the right side, not enough minutes to go around, and everything else. And especially when Mike Babcock is insistent on left-right for this tournament. He wants, he insists on having that balance.
So unlike the Olympics, this will be a tournament where you have a bit of a training camp, I think maybe 10, 11 days, a couple of pre-tournament games. Does that change the way you guys think about this team or about constructing a roster in any way where you aren't coming together and overnight you've got to be playing important games, but you have a little bit more time to install, whether it's defensive pairings, forward lines, even systems to an extent?
I think it does, Mike, because as opposed to the Olympics, especially with what happened in Sochi, where it was kind of a little bit very different, actually, than 2010 in Vancouver, because of the travel, right? Everybody goes over there. It's the middle of the season. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a bit of a culture shock for some guys who have never been to Russia, even those who have maybe earlier in previous international competitions. I think because you have a training camp, you get to construct the roster a little bit differently. But, you know, to Richie's point about, you know, who's going to be selected for the defense, I think this is where it's going to be super interesting, because they have until June to name the rest of the roster. That's where the water cooler arguments are really going to pick up, because, as you mentioned, Richie, with last 2014 Olympics, Jay Bouwmeester, Dan Hamhuis, I would say that Jay Bouwmeester and Dan Hamhuis are probably long shots to make this team because of the emergence of other players. I agree. I think Marc Giordano deserves to be on this team. I think Giordano has done an excellent job there in Calgary, but there are other defensemen. I mean, you could make an argument for Chris Letang. Chris Letang, especially since his injury problems, he's really turned it up and I think rejuvenated his career. And there are other defensemen too that you can make arguments for. Richie mentioned TJ Brody. I mean, there are probably 10 defensemen. PK Subban has to be thrown in there. But see, I know we're going to get to the other teams later, Drew, but I look at the Canadian roster and I don't think you can ever say that Canada is the clear favorite, because I think the Americans, the Russians, and the Swedes are in the conversation. I think those four teams are really the ones that are going to be competing for the gold. I mean, no disrespect to the Finns. I think the Finnish team is good. But to me, what always separates Canada is goaltending and defense. And I think the only other country that comes close to Canada in defense is Sweden. So you're talking Ekman-Larsson, you're talking Hedman, you're talking Erik Karlsson. I mean, they've Niklas Jarmolson. I mean, they've got a stacked defense there. But Canada, I mean, if you're talking about PK Subban possibly not being named to this team, PK Subban won a Norris Trophy a few years back. So this Canadian defense is always the strength of the team.
And because of the stupid rules, I mean, Aaron Ekblad would be in this conversation if not for the stupid rules.
Yeah, the stupid rules are, you know, we've talked about that ad nauseum about how it's not a best-on-best tournament. But, you know, even so, let's head to break. We'll come back. We'll look at some of the other teams. We got Russia. We got the U.S. We got Team North America.
We better get to Team U.S. with Mike here.
We're coming up next. The Americans will analyze their World Cup of Hockey entry next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. It's 10:20. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, the usual analysts on this program. And we've had Mike Colligan, who covers the NHL for Forbes Sports Money. He also covers the Pittsburgh Penguins. He's been in studio with us all show. He's in town to see the Jets play the Habs and the Oilers for a couple games. His first trip here to Peg City to see the local team. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Gentlemen, we continue our look at the World Cup of Hockey teams by now heading over to look at Team USA, which features two members of the Winnipeg Jets, Blake Wheeler and Dustin Byfuglien. Both made the initial 16-team squad that was announced on Wednesday. Are you guys surprised that Dustin Byfuglien, less so Blake Wheeler, he's been that good. Are you surprised that Byfuglien, a guy who didn't make Team USA in Sochi, was a surefire a lock to make this team as one of their first defensemen picked?
Well, I'll start off, guys. I'm not at all surprised. Again, am I biased because I watch Buff play all the time in Winnipeg? Maybe. But especially with the fact that this tournament is going to be on the North American ice surface. I think it's very conducive to Buff's game. So, no, absolutely not. Buff is on pace for another 20-goal season this year. I mean, he has been the Jets' best player, with the exception of maybe Blake Wheeler, who's also on Team USA. So, no, I'm not at all surprised. I think he's earned it. I think he was in the conversation for Sochi to make the Team USA roster. So I think he's going to be a great addition to this team.
I'm just surprised. Like, the Americans are developing more players, and you're seeing them, you know, you're seeing a guy like Austin Matthews coming through here and different young prospects. And maybe it's because of that under 23 team and then the effect on it, but pretty strong on the back end. I guess, Drew, I'm getting off of your Buffalo question.
That's fine. Go ahead. Take it where you want.
It's a forward group is not as dominant or powerful as maybe I thought that it would be. Maybe not going through the rosters in that league, but just thinking, okay, the American team, they put a little bit more of a forceful offensive group up there. But in terms of your Buffalo question, not really surprised. Drew, I think his ability to create offense, big body, I think he's effective on both the small and the big ice. He can play it both ways, and they want that impact. I mean, the guys that they named on the left side, Suter and McDonough, are able to kind of insulate guys, and Carlson's improved his defensive game, but insulate guys like Carlson and Buffen from taking some offensive chances. So if their left side guys were offensive guys who took chances, more so than, you know, if Buffen wouldn't play with another Buffen, I'm putting it that way.
Sure.
So because they have a guy like Suter who can stay at home and he can jump in when need be, guys like Buffen are, I think, easier to add to the team.
What about it, Mike? What about Team USA? That's your hometown team, as it were, for the World Cup of Hockey. What do you see from the Team USA roster, the preliminary roster that was announced?
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of the same faces that we saw in the last Olympic group, and so you've certainly got a group there that played well. Is not going to outscore Russia or Canada, but I think that's the way they're constructed, a Tortorella-type team that plays stingy defense, and so I don't think it's a surprise that a Phil Kessel was left off, a guy that isn't committed to defense and certainly not to Tortorella expectations. But you've got a Justin Abdelkader, a big surprise for me having him on that
great
roster,
player.
But a two-way player that can do a lot of different things. And again, we've talked about the importance of versatility, moving up and down the lineup, playing shorthanded or in different roles. Abdelkader certainly capable of that, and I think shows you really what they're trying to construct here, Dean Lombardi and this Team USA team.
Yeah, Mike, you make a good point, and you wonder, you know, if you know the fact that he's played a lot with Zetterberg and Datsyuk and Kronwall and all these guys has any impact. I don't think that was why he was picked. But, you know, we've talked about it a lot on this show, you know, from Michigan, a guy that, you know, could be the future captain of the Detroit Red Wings, a guy that can play on the first line, second line, third line of any team, really fast guy, as you mentioned, gritty guy. I like the construction of this team, and you never want to write off Team USA. I mean, they did, in fact, win the first World Cup of Hockey, right? And you look at this team.
1996.
And, yeah, I know.
These guys weren't even born then.
We got Tony Amonte coming up on the show later, Richie.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, starting with Blake Wheeler and going up and down that forward group. I mean, Patrick Kane, you've got the top scorer in the NHL right now. And there are some notable omissions. I mean, Tyler Johnson, I expect to be on this team. I don't see Tyler Johnson not being on this team, and I know there was a little bit of controversy with that when this roster was announced. But again, they are going to name four more forwards, and I still think that when you look at this American team, they're strong in every area. But when you look at that goaltending, I know Corey Schneider left the game yesterday against Dallas, but
I think he'll be healthy by September.
Whether it's Corey Schneider or Jonathan Quick in net, both of these guys have the ability to steal games. So the Americans are second to none in goal. And even though they might be a little bit weaker than teams like Canada and Sweden on defense, that forward group, I mean, some of those guys, Oshie, Parise, Pavelski's a top goal scorer. Stepan is having another good year for the Rangers. Pacioretty. I mean, this is still a very talented group. I still think they're a contender to win this thing.
Do they have the center depth that you're looking for here? You mentioned Joe Pavelski, Derek Stepan, Ryan Kessler.
Mm-hmm.
Are you excited about that? Do you think they can go up against some of these teams that have really, really good center depth?
Yeah, I don't think so right now. I mean, it's going to be tough. When you look at the matchups and you know, anybody who plays hockey, you get down to that. And if you're taking the draw and you look across the way and see you're taking the draw against, and if you think you're outmatched every time that you're taking a draw, you're probably in trouble. And is there any, if you're going up against Canada, for example, is there anybody you think you have an advantage over? You know, probably not. I mean, your best player is clearly Patrick Kane in terms of forwards. And then you look at guys like Kessler. Is he the same player? Does Pavelski even succeed as much on at center as he does on wing? What Derek Stepan are you getting? So, I mean, there are those aspects of it. And I think it's a good question, Mike, is you know, who else are you coming up the middle with that's going to be that impactful? You talk about Tyler Johnson, as he being a guy to be on the team, sure. But, you know, which Tyler Johnson are you getting? Are you getting last year's? Are you getting this year's? And I know there's, you know,
injury concerns
and such. But you look through, you know, I look through the NHL.com at the American players, and a lot of these guys, I think they're 2 years away. Like, and they're the restriction of this under 23 team away from really being an impactful group. You know, you look at Dylan Larkin, Vincent Trocheck, Jack Eichel. I mean, then you're getting to, like, when I think about the American team, I think about, okay, there's a lot more offense there. And I look at this group and I think, well, not so much. Mm-hmm. So I think in 2000 was in 2008. No.
The Olympics will be
2016.
16, yeah.
Yeah. No, 18, sorry.
18, 2018. And then the World Cup of Hockey 2020.
Yeah, yeah. So the idea that team, I think, will be a completely different American team than you're seeing here. This one's going to have to, I think Mike's kind of alluding to it, you're going to have to grind it out a bit more. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that team in 2 years from now will have to do that.
Well, that segues nicely into our conversation about Team North America, which is, of course, the under-23 team. Yep. For the World Cup of Hockey entry. You know, John Gibson, Connor Hellebuck, Matt Murray. You know, Hellebuck, of course, we're familiar with. Matt Murray, Mike, you're familiar with. He's the Penguins prospect we were just talking about earlier in the show. Their defense, I mean, you know, Ekblad and Jones, when those two guys are leading your defense, you're in pretty decent hands. You know, this is the most intriguing entry as far as I'm concerned. I'm excited to see how these young guns do against the other nations of the world.
Well, I'll start off here, and then I'll throw it to Mike here. I mean, I saw the North American roster come out, and I think everybody here would agree. Johnny Gaudreau is probably the one obvious guy that would for sure be on Team USA if there wasn't this North American roster. Potentially Larkin and Eichel too, but maybe because they're in their rookie years. Yeah. Gaudreau, because he's been in the league more, I think he would be on the USA team. But I look at this North American roster, and it's great for Connor Hellebuck to get named to the roster, by the way, in his rookie season. It's obviously going to be an extremely young group. I mean, the average age has got to be 21 here. But I look at this group, and I don't think it's going to compete with the Canadas and the USAs and the Russias and Swedens in this tournament. I mean, I think it's going to be ridiculously exciting to watch. But you look at that defense, and, you know, Ekblad and Jones are obviously going to be the anchors of that defense. But you have a lot of other players on this team that they're very, I guess, unestablished as far as what they've done at the senior international level. I mean, all of these players have played at the Iva Hlinka or the World Under 20 Junior Championships. But when you're going up against some of the top tier teams, like, I think North America could maybe upset the European team, or possibly, you know, another team. But I think once you get into, you know, the later stages of this tournament, I don't think that the North American team just has enough experience that they're going to be able to really go anywhere in this tournament. Like, I could see them keeping the games close, and they'll score some goals. But I don't know. I just think that, you know, it's going to be tough for them to compete against the top teams.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see some of these guys together. The goaltending, I think, is a question, despite the upside of John Gibson, Hellebuck, and Matt Murray. What are you getting from those three? Can you rely on them under pressure like this? I also wonder, who's going to kill penalties on this team?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're an 18-year-old in the NHL, you're probably not coming in and killing penalties your first season. Where is the depth of that team and the role players when you're maybe throwing a Johnny Gaudreau into a third or fourth line? Is he used to that? Is he comfortable there? That there's question marks. I think I agree. It'll be exciting, but not sure that this team stacks up against the best in the tournament.
Yeah, I just don't think this team can defend. Like, to Mike's point, he's really leading to that. Is like, you're talking about top-end talent playing against young players who usually aren't very good at defending, young offensive players, so the forwards who aren't very good at defending, and then the defense who...
I think that would be Couturier's role, I think, for the most part. I mean, because he's...
Yeah, that's great, Drew, but then so that's great against Sagan. Then what are you doing against Crosby,
course,
and what are you going to do against the other lines?
Then that's where the problem comes into play.
So that's where it's so difficult, and you're going to see there's going to be... This team is going to have... Like, transition offense probably as good as anybody, but they're going to be in their zone for 30 to 40 seconds at a time. You're going to be like, what is going on here? This is a fire drill.
Well, it should be high scoring at the very least. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at some of the other entries in the World Cup of Hockey. We'll do Team Sweden coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.